SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick.
Enough!
Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
Belmont Park, a very good Belmont Week Monday. Race fans, Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964. If you're listening to Sirius XM online and at our website, stevebick.com, back at Belmont Park, and it does have all the regular trappings as well as a few of the new hints of what is to come around here in coming years, not just in coming days. Tomorrow they'll draw the Saturday card. You've already got your Thursday and Friday Belmont Racing Festival cards up and ready for your analysis or at least your perusal. And two already terrific days of racing. We will get, I'm sure, to that in a little bit. It's tough to come here, the third leg of the Spring Classic Trail, and, you know, not dive right in to the Belmont themes and the Belmont pleasantries. But, obviously, after we got off the air at noon on Friday, the increasing drum beats that were coming out of Louisville regarding the potential move of the remainder of the season of the meet to Ellis Park. And that came to pass. Once you hear that kind of suggestion from a couple of different sources, you pretty much know that some variation is going to come to pass. So the news official, you know, the official release and the subsequent Q&As that came with it essentially, you know, take the last 3 weeks of the spring meet and give everybody at Churchill a chance to further delve into what may have contributed to the spate of injuries. Now, we've been discussing it, obviously, since Derby week and really since arriving in Louisville at the end of April. And I'd like to think that, you know, those that are, you know, those that tune into this show, you understand a lot of the, you know, the where's and why for's that are involved in this. And you know, we've literally covered every, you know, major or pronounced cluster of incidents and fatalities that, you know, have been used as, you know, a study point to try to improve all of the elements that go into trying to assure, because you've as much obviously as you try, you cannot 100%. There's, I don't care what tactics are done, taken, what elements, the precautions, the surface, people, you know, we've discussed already the, you know, potential, what would, you know, a new era of synthetics portend. We spent a fair amount of time on that last week. The reality is that no matter what we do, there's going to be horses that get hurt and die. And I think until there's a comprehensive approach to explaining that, and not to use it as some shield against criticism, because it feels like no matter what answers are offered, they're not going to be satisfactory to a certain percentage of critics of, you know, the game and of equine sport and equine anything. The use of any equine for any activity. So we better collectively have an approach to this that is better than the one that we've got so far. The reality is the work that's gone into trying to improve and minimize incidents is something to be very proud of, to be honest. And instead of you know, hanging our head somehow, you have to, I don't want to say fight back, but you have to very calmly and in an orderly fashion explain. And I don't know if you're going to stem the tide of sensationalism that, because the people that are sensationalizing anything that happens in this, you know, in this regard, they're going to continue to sensationalize anything and everything they can. So from that standpoint, we're not going to be satisfying any, you know, a certain percentage. The percentage that it would be nice to think we can edify and get to understand are those that, you know, took notice and have taken notice over the last month and have questions. You know, how does something like this happen? Why does it happen? And you can just explain that it's in a lot of cases a statistical anomaly. There's clusters. I used chaotic number theory last week. This is not, you know, there's so many different factors that play into this. So for those that you know, immediately were horrified at how can they do this? Why would they do? Well, there's a lot of prudent decision making, obviously, that goes into this, and diffusing, you know, it's basically trying to let some of the steam out of the pressure cooker. It feels like a smart move. I mean, there are some other executional elements that I certainly want to bring up, and I will this morning. The first almost half of the morning, we'll still have plenty of time this week, obviously, to devote to Belmont Week. But especially with the draw being tomorrow for the Saturday card, we can take some time, because this is a huge and important story and topic. Joining us in the next hour and change, because we also want to get in a lot of the news from the weekend, and good and bad. And Mark Hasse will join us. Mark Hasse had a magical weekend. Just unbelievable. I don't know if you saw the thing I put up yesterday. You know, there was Mrs. Weber and her two horses sweeping Saturday at Woodbine, the Royal North and the Belmahone. They tried to alert that Super Hoity Toity, returning to Woodbine, had a big shot to beat Moira, and she did. So that was part of the Cassie Hall. There was also the Jersey Derby, the mild upset, Boppy O beating Talk of the Nation at Monmouth in the Jersey Derby. And then in a lot of ways, I mean, not that the other wins aren't important, at Churchill, 2 seconds in the graded stakes, in amongst the graded stakes, and Web Slingers repeat another win, this time in the Audubon, and that win, incredibly heartening and a uplifting and mood enhancing, at least for the Greens, who of course continue to mourn the loss of Lois Green, and so that and Mark will pay tribute undoubtedly to Lois with this visit, but obviously Mark also heavily stationed at Churchill, so I want to hear how he's going to handle and how his barn and owners are handling the news and et cetera. I also touch base with Dave Carroll at Churchill, who of course runs the string there for Mark, and you know, to a person, everybody involved is satisfied. You're going to hear the three people. You're going to hear Mark Cassie, then Kenny McPeak, who brought Rock and Roll back on the 2 weeks from Pimlico Special, and he just keeps going strength to strength. The son of Connect wins the Blame. So we'll get. I got some other. Kenny had some other wins. In fact, I haven't had a chance to talk to him about. And again, heavily invested, and somebody who very famously. I mean, we talked about it over the last several summers. Has started 2-year-olds at Ellis. And Dale Romans, I'm sure Dale, as much as anybody, can appropriately discuss, you know, a relocation of the rest of the meet to Ellis. And you know, Dale's having, you know, it's funny, we hinted at this in Florida, right? In March, you could see the Dale Romans barn coming alive, and Dale's hitting on he's hitting squarely on all fours. So we'll get Dale's take. So Dale Romans, Kenny McPeak, and Mark Cassie to address and you know, their recent performances, as well as the situation that will move the racing to the pea patch. You know, there's some very, you know, there's some very real world difficulties. A month of race cards and the people that work at the racetrack at Churchill. They're, you know, how they're affected. I mean, there's a lot, and there's really no way to right now anyway to quantify what that represents. But it does ideally give everybody a chance to take a breath. And of course, there's also the HISA element to this, and it feels like there, and Mark being on the advisory panel, Mark can talk about that too. It was there, it seemed like it was the inclination of the HISA, you know, leadership to go in this in this direction, and to, you know, gain the benefit of pausing, and in this case, relocating the rest of the meet. So, I mean, in terms of the racetrack, all three of these guests, I think, will tell you that they have no issue in regards to the track itself. And, you know, talked to some other people the last couple of days who brought up a very germane point. Do we think that people like Steve Asmussen and anybody else, Brad Cox and Brendan Walsh and, you know, anybody, if we just saw Pretty Mischievous go by minutes ago. She's running in the Acorn on Friday. That Acorn is going to be really fun. Do you really think that those outfits would be galloping and training and sending stake winners that are worth seven figures, in some cases multiple seven-figure amounts. If there was any concerns about the racetrack, you think that those outfits would be out there sending these horses for workouts and races? And from that standpoint, there's obviously other factors, multifactorial, as the saying goes, and as we've tried to explain many, many times. So that's at least a partial introduction to the scenario. One thing that, if you haven't poked around Twitter over the last 24 hours from Churchill, one thing, and in fact, Dale, I should probably save this for Dale, but you got to take a look at the amazing video that Greg Hall caught. He was over, he must have been over on the first turn when, in that sixth race, a 50 maiden claimer, there was a heel clipping incident, and a horse of Dale's and a horse of Kara Toy's came together. Martin Garcia and Jane Elliott, the young English rider, and you see her regularly at Indy, but she takes calls everywhere. She's in Belterra, comes into Churchill. They came together, and the horses kind of clipped, and they both got dropped. As far as I can tell, they're both okay. The horses go riderless. It was a one-turn, the one-turn mile. And if you have not seen Greg Blasi, the mother of all outriders, if you have not seen Blasi somehow manage to collar both of them on the gallop out, he it's unbelievable. He grabs Son of Thunder to his left, and quite interestingly, actually, Winger, the 11, Winger sort of came over and almost offered, kind of said, take me, grab me, take me home. I don't like this running around. So it was kind of remarkable. So Blasi manages to gather up both of these horses, and then he handed off. I think he handed off Son of Thunder, but it's pretty cool. And boy, if we think it's hard to explain, some of the things that have, that have claimed these horses, if you think that's difficult enough, then try to explain, two horses clipping heels and one or both. I don't even want to imagine. Look that up if you haven't already. All right. A couple of things before I get Mark Cassie in here. We got to catch up on Friday night. Friday was active, not just Friday night too, but speaking of Belterra, they had that Best of Ohio card where Mike Maker and Farron Peterson, a couple of stake wins, and we'll go through that. But at Penn, in that Penn Mile, Major Dude had major trouble. He was much the best under Arad, and wins that Penn Mile. The one upset on that card, and she was far from impossible. But Mally Moo, Jack Sisterson, and Calumet win the Penn Oaks. Trevor McCarthy, it's a nice win for Trevor. Then you had some heavy type favorites the rest of the way. Gordian Knot for Lupe Preciado, and you had that Hardy Constitution for Joe Sharp in the Lafard, by Land and Sea, Preciado as well. There was one more. Oh, Michael Matz. Matz winning the new start with Late Frost. So those were the principals, and the rest of it we'll get as the morning unfolds. I guess arguably the biggest performance, we got to talk about Richard Mandela. In fact, I'm sure when John White joins us later, John will talk about it. But Mandela sweeps the two stakes, the three-year-old stakes at Santa Anita, Summertime Oaks, window shopping. And, couldn't get a visit in with Marcus Hirsch on Friday, but I asked Marcus, what's your best opinion? What's your favorite play of the weekend? And he said window shopping. And nice 3-1 plus window shopping. the American Pharoah wins that Summertime Oaks, and then Go Rocket Ride and Skinner scratched. So not that the you know, doesn't diminish the accomplishment. Wins the Affirmed with Ramon Vasquez. That was yesterday. So Chad Brown here, Kalik wins that Pennine Ridge, and Chad seems already really well postured for the Belmont Festival. All right, let's press in and get Mark Cassie started. All right, and we'll get these conversations. I want to, there was no way we couldn't address, what transpired over the weekend, and try to put some context to it and help everybody, digest and deal with it. Mark Cassie is joining us after what can only be described as a remarkable weekend. Mark, congratulations.
Thanks, Steve. Thanks.
I gave the introduction a little bit earlier, just at the start of the show, about everything that you managed to accomplish. And I think we'll get the heavy lifting and the emotional portion of this out of the way first. The win by Web Slinger.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah.
Should I save it for last or first?
Well, I don't know. It'll be tough for me, but let's go.
Well, obviously the Greens losing Matriarch Lois midweek,
yeah.
And this had to be really tough. But I actually texted John, and I said that, it had to at least lift everybody's spirits and give a pleasant distraction for just a little bit. So that was well done.
Yeah, it's been tough. It's been really tough. She's just a remarkable woman and a great person, and one of those people that you just want to win for, you want to do good for. And we used to have some, as I'd said somewhere else, a lot of people didn't realize how involved she was,
right,
in it. And I'd get a call and I'd look at it, and it'd be her. She'd want to talk about the races, so that's going to be missed. And she knew what she was talking about too. Not only is she lovely, right? She was brilliant.
Yeah.
Very smart.
Yeah. An integral part of the business, and they've got they've got a far flung operation, and she was a major component, as well as I posted, and I know it's probably lost on some people, but in the Jewish tradition and in Proverbs, the expression "a woman of valor," and is essentially what is a poem, and she absolutely exemplified that.
I could not agree more. I just can't say enough wonderful things about her. And as I said, it's been extremely hard on Tina and I. And I can only imagine, Len and John and the entire family. So, anyways, it was nice to win. And then listening to David Carroll after Web Slinger winning, he had us all crying again. So there's been we had a great weekend. We won a lot of races, but it was a very emotional weekend. Very emotional. I'm like exhausted.
No, it's a draining scenario. And frankly, just, you had a lot of horses to look after on a big weekend with six different stakes, and you win four of them, Mark, and you finish second in two others. A very nice pair of wins for Mrs. Weber. Obviously, our flash drive, you would expect, that our flash drive would be tough in the Royal North. But Super Hoity Toity, I said on Friday with Ron Gierking that I thought she had every chance to beat Moira in there coming back to Woodbine.
Yeah, first, you know, our flash drive's been special, and a lot of people, the plan had been to retire last year. And after she was so impressive in her the Bessarabian, I kind of begged and pleaded with Mrs. Weber. I said, I think I'm not sure I've done a great job with this filly. I said, I've been trying to get her to go, you know, long. And I said, I think she's a sprinter. And I said, please, let's not retire. These don't come, these kind of horses don't come around all the time. And so she agreed with it. And so it was nice because there was a little bit of pressure bringing her back. But so far, it's been very rewarding. So that was good. I agree with you, Steve, with Super Hoity Toity. You know, when I looked at the odds and they had made more of 1-2 or whatever it was, I kind of was like, please, come on. She may beat us. But they don't realize Super Hoity Toity has this habit, and that is she likes to win. And I thought a race down at Gulfstream was really good. I'm not so sure she shouldn't have won the stake at Gulfstream. And I think Patrick came back in his interview post-race, said, look, I should have probably won the race. There was some trouble at the half-mile pole. She got stopped, backed up, and came running again. So she's pretty good. Obviously, Patrick rode a very smart race. We got away with some slow fractions early on, and that didn't hurt our chances. But I mean, look, Mora's a great filly, but so is Super Hoity Toity. So,
what does this do for? In fact, talk about all three. Really, we just the three winners, and then we'll get to Bapio in a minute, but. What's ahead for everybody?
I don't know, because that's one of the things that Mrs. Weber and I will have a conversation probably this week going forward. I kind of was hoping with our flash drive, I just, you know, the options aren't great. She's a really good sprinter. I think she won the other day, but she won because she was the best. But she maybe wants to sit back a little bit. I don't know if I may try run her, you know, like 5.5 furlongs or something on the turf, or I may just leave her in Toronto. There's another I can't remember the name of the race coming up, but there's a Tapita race, and because she can do either one, it really doesn't matter. I mean, ultimately, we do want to try to maybe make the Breeders' Cup sprint. So whatever we do will be with that in mind. Super Hoity Toity, she can do anything. She can run on Tapita. She can run on grass. Again, it's something that I'm going to talk to her about. We'll go from there. And then that was those two fillies. Who was the third one you were asking about?
The web slinger going forward, because there's so many options, Mark, for these 3-year-old turfers, and some of it involves stretching out.
Yeah, we're going in. The Belmont Derby's always been our goal,
right?
And that continues to be our goal.
All right, let's turn to. A very nice win for Bapio, I thought, at Monmouth, beating being Shug's nice horse.
Yeah, that was that horse has really grown up. I thought he got a brilliant ride, beat a good horse. I personally had thought Shug's horse was one of the better turf horses in North America, 3-year-olds, and we beat him pretty soundly. I would say that he'll probably come back in the Belmont Derby as well. He showed the other day that he could rate. I thought it was a big race. He got a 93 buyer, which was a career high. And that puts him right there. I'm not sure what the the Panay Ridge winner got, but it couldn't have been much higher. So
90 for Cowling.
Yeah, and then Webb Slinger, I think, got an 85. But Webb Slinger,
86.
You know, I talked to Javier after the race. He said, as soon as he made the lead, he pulled himself up. You know, Avi was under the – he said he won really very easily. So I think he's a better, you know, as from a time – buyer number. He ran a tremendous race in the when he won the previous stake. I mean, from a thoroughgraph number, he was far superior. I think that's probably – why they bet him down so much at, you know, on Saturday. His number, his last number was phenomenal at Churchill.
Well, the thing about Bapio's win, this kind of breaks what I'm sure was getting to be a little bit of a frustrating, you know, run where he was, you know, he's offering good efforts and just getting beat. He cashing a lot of checks.
Yeah, I really thought, Steve, that he had a couple trips that probably, you know, he maybe should have won. I also thought about running him in the Panay Ridge, and I just thought, you know what, I want to try to get him winning again. You know, the Jersey Derby was good, and then Shug's Horse showed up there, and I was like, oh boy. You know, so yeah, what a mare. That's, you know, Poppy is Papa Cap's half brother.
Yeah,
I mean, I think that's that mare's first two folds. So what's amazing is they have a beautiful, beautiful War of Will colt yearling out of that mare, so that's exciting.
You know, Mark, too, before we go back to Churchill, you mentioned the ride, and that's the first time you've used Isaac Castillo.
It is, and really, he had helped us some in the mornings with David Carroll, and you know, we were struggling to find a rider, and we kept Shane Tripp, who is my assistant in New York, kept bringing him up, and as did David Carroll. So I said, okay, well, let's give him a shot. And I mean, he rode a tremendous race.
Three wins for Isaac Saturday, because he also rode a winner for Gargan and for Frank Russo early on the card. So
yeah, I didn't realize that, yep. But you know, really, I may flirt with the idea of bringing him to Belmont to ride him next time.
Very
so,
nice,
something to think about.
Bapio is a Bolt Doro, as we mentioned, out of Papascat, Russell Wood Farm. And I tell you, that is now feeling like a bargain. $190,000 Bolt Doro colt feels like this was a good purchase.
So that was a funny story in itself. So Mr. Oxley actually called me and he said, "Have you looked at Papa Cap's half brother at the yearling sale?" And I said, "I have. I love him." And then my call from Breeze Easy came up and said, "Have you seen Papa Cap's half brother?" I said, "Yeah, we vetted him, and I said, "Mr. Oxley's going to try to buy him," and he goes, "Well, can we just go partners?"
Wow!
And so I called up Mr. Oxley, and he said, "Yeah, sure." And so that's how that happened.
That's unbelievable. You know, for those who don't remember, I mean, Papascat, the dam, that was a nice Scat Daddy filly and mare that Gary Sims trained.
Right.
And was a nice horse. Was a good, I think, was a stake caliber. I don't know if she won a stake, but she was nice. This feels like a smart purchase. Mark,
yeah.
Let's go back to Churchill, and we'll use the two placements as a jumping-off point for the discussion about what's going on and the move to Ellis Park, and the two nice performances in defeat early in the card. Papilio came back, and actually, I thought ran fine coming out of the Edgewood.
Yeah, she, you know, she. Look, Graham's filly was tough. Yeah. She got a jump on us. Javier's ridden for me for a long time. And I would say, you know, I think he was more frustrated. I talked to him right after the race. He was very frustrated. He thought he should, you know, he thought he could have given that filly a run for her money. He just got held up and had nowhere to go. But I think, you know, when she won at Keeneland, we covered her up and she made a big run and won. When we ran her in the Edgewood, I think on Oaks Day, she was a little close to the pace and we felt like she didn't finish as strong. So going into this race, we had thought about passing this race because we're going to go to the Belmont Oaks with her. And but David Carroll just kept raving about how good she was training. And we were there, so we said, well, let's go ahead and we'll run. And she ended up, I think she got an 88 buyer, which is a career high for her. But she is she's a serious filly. And I think she showed that. I mean, she comes to play every time. And then Get Smoking, he ran his eyeballs out. I was extremely proud of him. You know, he's another horse that is just, he comes and he runs hard all the time. I'm hoping, and this is maybe a little stretch, but we haven't won the four star Dave in a while. So I think if he can continue his form, his style of running really suits the four-star Dave, just like it did for Got Stormy, where speed, you know, on the inner turf at Saratoga, the turns, the speed on the turns can make the difference. So that would be, I would say, our long-term goal with him would be the four-star Dave.
Well, and you know, this is an interesting story, Mark, because you know, we think back to Get Smokin's, you know, to his career with Tommy Bush and for Mrs. Sullivan, and there's a nice group of partners that got involved. Talk for a minute about, you know, how that all, you know, how this agglomeration came about.
I really don't know, but you know, Harlan, he called me up one day and he said, I bought this horse and I think would you train him for us? And I said, yeah, of course. And I probably got him since, you know, I have had a little luck with Get Stormies.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
I'm sure. But, yeah, and it's turned out, you know, it's turned out well. He's a nice horse and he's very good right now. Very good. We had some issues with him towards the latter part of last year, brought him home, actually operated on him, took chips out of both of his ankles. And it took him a while. I was concerned. It took him a while, a lot of rehab and for him to bounce back. But he's come back now with vengeance.
Well, for those that are wondering, Iron Horse is Iron Horse, Rock, Black Ridge Stables, TNT Equine Holdings, and Saratoga 7 Racing Partners all together on Get Smoking, the six-year-old gelding. And it's not easy, Mark, to take a five-year-old horse and you know, keep him, even improve him a little bit. I mean, he's as good now as he's ever been.
Well, and I tell you, that group, a lot of that is with that group. They've been very patient. You know what, Steve, I'm a lucky guy. I'm a lucky guy because, you know, I train for a lot of good people that have no problem giving horses time. And for us, this is the time of year that this is what we prepare for. Unlike, you know, a lot of people, we give a lot of our day, 75% of our horses get a break. And that's where they all come to our training center in Ocala. It's where I spend the winter. And we give them a break and bring them back. And it's always our focus is always, you know, spring and summer and fall. And then the horses we run during the winter time are usually horses that one maybe had a late start and they're getting, or obviously Oaks and Derby horses, we keep them going, or horses that we think we have, you know, a chance of maybe making the Derby and the Oaks, Queen's Plate horses. But horses need a break. And I have a bunch of wonderful owners that understand that. And Mrs. Weber is a prime example of that. If I have a horse, she keeps track how long we've had it. And after about 6 months, she starts saying, when's he coming home for a break? So, yeah. And I think that's, too, one of the reasons you say, you know, why these older horses continue to run. It's because they do get breaks. So.
Absolutely. Kind of, you know, an old school. And I'm sure that that's going to be a part, that's part of the topics that I think a lot of people are thinking about right now, Mark. Let's I could ask about other things, but let's turn to Churchill. And I mean, obviously you've got the opportunity with your operation to, you know, scatter, not to say scatter to the winds, but you can send horses a lot of different places. What's your thoughts? You also being on the HISA advisory committee, you have to be involved in these discussions that, basically had a kind of an emergency tone to them. Talk a little bit about your thoughts and what you think, you know, stakeholders and horse players and fans should be, how they should be reacting to what transpired Friday.
Well, first, just let me say, yes, I'm on the HISA advisory board, and I've made it very clear to anybody that asked me that I am all for HISA. That being said, that is not something that we would be involved in. When as on the advisory board, what's put in front of us are you know, different regulations or different procedures, and how do we think we can do it? You know, how can it be done better? And it's a big process. But I come away from those meetings very, I think they're great, and you go, we've all had people that we talk to and you look and you think, you know, it goes in one ear and out the other. That's not the case here. They listen, and they listen well, and they make changes if there needs to be changes. But I had nothing to do with, you know, with what went on at Churchill this weekend. From a personal standpoint, I understand. I mean, look, we have to figure out a better way, and. I don't know. I think it's probably a bunch of different things. And you know what else I am? You know, I'm a big, you know, I love synthetic racetracks too. So I sit there and we look at, you know, the difference in the fatality rates, and it's significant. And so, I don't, you know, the tracks, and I'm not saying Churchill Downs, but in general, we just got to continue to try to be better, try to figure it out. I don't think there is one component that actually led to, you know, a terrible couple weeks.
Sure.
At Churchill. But I do, and I do understand that we got to get that figured out, and we couldn't afford to have more at Churchill. We could not. Churchill is one of our leaders, and when Churchill doesn't, you know, when things go bad at Churchill, it's not good for any of us. And so I understand. And yeah, is it Is it tough for us? Yes, it's very tough. You know, I spent my weekend making moves and changing. And, you know, every time we go somewhere, we have a large staff. We have to find housing. It's quite an ordeal. But, I think it was probably a wise decision.
How are you going to distribute your horses? I mean, how big of a difference is it for the horses that are Churchill based in terms of, I mean, the purse money and so forth? Some of that doesn't appear to have, you know, any, you know, there's no wholesale changes on that regard. So how do you adjust?
Well, we're not gonna change a lot. So our operation is this. We keep most of our horses that are running in Kentucky at Churchill. We keep them at Churchill, right, with David Carroll. I keep a lot of almost all. We have 20. I want to say 21 or 22 horses at Keeneland, all 2-year-olds. And there, that's with Alan Hardy, who's been with me for a long time. That's where we're getting the young horses ready we're planning to run at Keeneland. I mean, at Churchill, or sometimes I pull those out and send them to New York and run them if races aren't going and whatever. But they're just going to move. Alan's going to move to Ellis, which we always do. We're just going to move a little earlier. We're going to shift, you know, we'll send horses down as they run. We're just going to, it really isn't going to change a whole lot. We're going to run in Kentucky at Ellis Park, just like we were running at Churchill Downs. So that's not really changing for us.
Very good. All right. I appreciate it. I wanted to get, you know, the snap reaction. I will say I'm surprised that I am surprised to go back to Heiser for a second that nobody asked your thoughts at any juncture, despite your presence, your significant presence.
No, I wouldn't say no, of course.
Okay.
Of course, of course, I was asked that.
Right.
But what I'm saying to you is, my job at HISA and the advisory board,
okay. So, in other words, all right. So to clarify,
yes.
you did offer input into the process that was.
Oh yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Can you give us any feel for the nature of those discussions?
Well, obviously it was about track surface, right? And I I'm not there all the time. To me, the guy that probably could answer that question better than anybody is David Carroll. David Carroll, you know, gets on our horses every day.
Yep.
He's get ridden some of the best horses to race, you know, Easy Goer. He's been doing it for a long time.
Yep.
And so, you know, that's who I went to, and there was much discussion. And but I had no, you know, I didn't have any decision in HISA recommending the move. Yeah,
no, fair enough.
My opinion was asked, and it doesn't matter, Steve. I get my opinion asked in lots of places. New York, a lot of you know, I'm on the I'm the executive board of OBS. I do that too, and the one thing that we do have is, you know, we have a pretty big presence at those places, so they just ask my opinion. And so of course my opinion was asked, and there was discussion. Yes.
All right. And I'm trying to help people understand how this all, you know, the shape this all took. But I'm with you. It to me it seems very prudent and a practical way to. I don't want to say move the goalposts, but it does take the pressure out of the cooker.
And again, you know, I have my opinions, but given my position at HISA and being on that advisor, I try to, you know, I'm going to keep my opinions to myself.
Okay. Fair enough. Mark, an emotional but got to be a very satisfying weekend. And we've heard you two or three times now in the last month or so. So obviously things are rolling pretty good.
Yeah, it was a bit of a slow winter and spring, but you know, that's kind of the way our business is, which is interesting. I was having that conversation today. You know, Mrs. Weber really struggled early. Our Live Oak struggled during the winter time, and it was painful. And you know, she won two great stakes this weekend, and if things continue as I think they are, you're going to hear a lot more.
Outstanding.
We have an exciting filly in Ryder. She won the stake a couple of weeks ago. I'm excited to get her on the turf. And we have a filly called Ticker Tape Home running this weekend.
Yeah.
That is trained extremely well. And I think she's going to be tough. You know, could be a Canadian Oaks type filly. So,
oh, very nice.
Yeah.
How about let me ask about that maiden, too, Dozen Diamonds.
Yeah, there's a case, Steve, where we had that filly at Keeneland, and when Churchill chose, they had decided before all this that they weren't going to run maidens on the grass. Well, she's by Mendelssohn, and I really feel like her future's the grass, so I sent her to Belmont, and that's what we'll do. You'll see a lot of times where horses get ready, you're going to see a filly run. I have a filly called Golden Ghost that I'm going to run in the state first time out. I think it may be Belmont Day or the day before Belmont. It's the first 2-year-old filly stake in New York. I had her in Kentucky, sent her up to run her in a maiden race, and the race didn't go, and so we were just sitting there waiting. We're going to run her as a first-time starter at the stake. Hmm. So you'll see. We do that a lot. We also make, you know, we get a lot of our horses started at Gulfstream as well. We'll get a race into them. You know, last year, Webslinger made his first start at Ellis Park. I like to run them, and I like to watch how they run, and then decide where they need to be. And I watched Webslinger run his first start, and I said to Alan, well, Alan is my assistant, but I said to John Green and Len, I said, I think this horse could be a serious horse. I said, I'm going to bring him to Saratoga. And we brought him to Saratoga, and he first time he ran in Saratoga, I think he ran in an auction race on the turf, and he almost went over the fence. He dropped back to last.
I remember this.
And came running. Louis Saez rode him for me, and he came back, and he said to me, "This horse can really run." And then that's why, remember, we went as a maiden to the now.
Okay.
And then he won the now at Monmouth, you know. So that's kind of the way we do it. I like getting them started. And then, because you never know when you run them, some are going to go forward, some are going to go backwards. But I like getting them started. And then, you know, it's like going to the line. We call audibles at the line and figure out which way we're going. So, anyways.
Wow, this is this Dozen Diamonds. This is for DJ. Looks like a modest purchase. What's interesting is that damn 12 Jewels. You must have been familiar, because that's a sister of Inglorious Dixie Strike as well.
So you knew
this group. Yeah,
she. I'm not sure she's a superstar. Hopefully, she becomes one. But our thoughts were that she needed to be on the grass, and So she's in New York. I don't keep, so we only keep about 20 horses in New York. So I don't send a lot of the young horses there, because the important part of getting the young horses ready is having a lot of other young horses to train with. So we do all that in Kentucky. Now, once we move to Saratoga, we normally have 30 or 34 in Saratoga. I'll bring a few more of the young horses up there. But so that's kind of the way we do it. Okay?
Outstanding. Mark, this was terrific. I appreciate it.
All right. You have a great day.
All right. Mark Cassie, everybody. And obviously a lot that went into the weekend. And Kenny McPeak is going to be next. Kenny is just sent me a question mark. well, I absolutely wanted to make sure to flesh out everything that went into that with the Heisa influence on Churchill. And Kenny McPeak is joining us now. And actually, Kenny, I just finished with Mark Cassie. There's a lot in common, actually, to his the conversation with him and with you, because you're just hitting on all cylinders right now.
Well, nice horses help, right? We've had some really good horses in the barn recently, so it makes all the difference in the world. Mark's colt, was it Web Slinger?
Yes.
We were second the other day to him, and good for you know, Lynn Green, and so sorry about losing his wife. I figured I was going to have a hard time beating him. He had an angel up there looking over him.
Well, and the horse in question, we'll start with a runner-up, I guess, Mendelssohn's March. And, you know, you go back to Derby weekend, and there was a buzz around him anyway. I mean, it feels like he's moving forward.
Well, this is a really nice horse. I thought at one point he was my best three-year-old, and I unfortunately got excluded from the Battaglia back in March, which was going to set him up really nice for the Jeff Ruby. That kind of threw us off pattern, and I chose to run him on the dirt, which he won. But then in hindsight, I probably should have just run him on the grass and the Keeneland Stake that spring, as opposed to the bluegrass. So that was kind of a misfire. And he's a good horse. I mean, I really felt like if everything went well and he'd run better in the American Derby, I wasn't going to be afraid to take him to the English Derby. But a race that I watched Saturday that one I'd love to participate in. But I think Web Slinger could have won that race. I mean, or at least could have run well in it.
Well, the the opportunities for three-year-olds on the grass going long, there's no shortage. I mean, what's the perfect ideal trip for him, do you figure?
Well, I think he wants more than a mile and an eighth. I think a mile and a quarter would be great for him. I'm probably going to nominate him to hopefully get invited to the Belmont Derby. Harold Lerner and his gang are all up east, and I think that'd be an ideal spot for him next time out. It's a race we won last year, so let's see. And the timing's good. Doesn't run till July 8th.
Mendelssohn's March, but that was just a runner-up performance. Let's talk about the biggest win of the weekend. And I know, you know, it's a grade three, but Kenny, the Rattle and Roll story is starting to get serious.
He's a tough horse. I mean, I'm lucky that I've got clients like the Mackin family that let me kind of do some things out of the box, but we've been conservative in how we've placed him, but we've been aggressive in how we've run him. And, you know, these grade threes are kind of his for the pickings when he's good. And at some point we're going to have to rise him up, I suppose. I'm already kind of tinkering in my head where I go next with him. But he's just a lovely horse to be around, and he's been a little bit overshadowed by Smile Happy, but at the same time, you know, he's not chopped liver, and he's continuing to go out there and do his work, and just a really nice horse. I mean, maybe the Cornhusker, or maybe we take him to New York and run him in something. We're going to nominate him to the Stephen Foster. We'll probably nominate him to the Suburban, and all good.
Well, suddenly three straight wins, the Ben Ally, the Pimlico Special, and the Blame. So two races at the Preakness Trip, the mile and 3/16, and now the mile and the 8th. And, of course, you go back to last year, Oklahoma Derby, St. Louis Derby. I mean, he's piling up the wins. He's a son of Connect out of a Johannesburg mare, which is interesting, I think, when you consider, you know, how much, you know, how far he's been going and the way he, you know, the way he runs.
You know, big, strong horse with a great hind leg, and he, you know, distance no problem whatsoever. And he really has figured out, you know, where the line is. And for him to overcome the trip he got the other day, I mean, he got mugged at about the 8th pole, and he won anyway.
Well, rattle and roll, and he's got to be up to, what, $1.5 million? $1.5 million in earnings.
Yep, $1.5 million, sure is.
How about that? And you know, frankly, you say, you know, look ahead, you know, keep building that resume, and it also feels, Kenny, like he's a horse that's going to keep getting better, right? I mean, he's got until next year.
Well, fingers crossed he does. I know that could be a whole lot of fun if he does that, and I think, you know, a horse like him, especially with his pedigree, which I think people have gotten a little down on Connect, but the horse keeps winning. And we've also got that other Connect, Hayes Strike, but he you know, does he have stallion value? At this point, he wouldn't, but, or at least not significant, but that doesn't mean you couldn't have a whole lot of fun with him over the next couple of years. The horse could run out a lot of money.
Well, you mentioned Smile Happy and you mentioned Hayes Strike. And I'm glad, you know, turns out, Kenny, I'm glad that I did not get a hold of you after, you know, the last, you know, 2 weeks ago. So there's plenty to talk about. Here is the other Connect from last week at Lone Star. This is Dixiana Homebred. Talk a little bit about where he's going, Hayes Strike.
Well, a horse that's on the improve. I thought that was a miracle finish that he pulled off with Christian Torres aboard. I watched that race repeatedly, and I couldn't call that we got there in time. But the young man did a great job getting him there. And this colt probably wants a little more ground than a mile and a 16th. And we'll mill over probably the Ohio Derby, or I might take him to the Pegasus up in Monmouth, which would be another kind of conservative spot. And then, you know, let's see. But he's been going the right direction. And I trained his brother. I'm sure you remember him, Senior Investment. He was third.
Oh, sure. Sure.
Yeah. And this is actually probably, you know, very similar type horse, a different made overall, but one that wants to run distance aground. And another one that seems to really kind of turn the corner this spring, and just real pleased with what direction he's gone.
Excellent. Hayes Strike, I'm just curious. I mentioned this last week after the win, and I was curious who else is, you know, I said that the Bluegrass, you know, sending out, you know, a lot of exiters. Who else? Yeah, because, well, then Race Kane and Mendelssohn's March, of course, as well. And, the Sun Thunder. Where is Sun Thunder, by the way?
We decided to give him a little break post-race. We felt like he had a little glute muscle that was bothering him a little bit and didn't want to have to – well, just wanted to give him time to let it settle. He got pretty well mugged leaving the gate in the Derby. If you watch the head-on view, horse hit him pretty hard and twisted him sideways. And he's a big, big, strong horse, but we're going to kind of treat him like we did Smile Happy. You know, he had his try at that, and we're going to give him time. And you probably won't see him again till fall.
All right, fair enough. Let's go to Smile Happy, because we didn't talk after the Ali Sheba. And very much, you know, you talk about the Mackin family and how much fun they're having, Lucky Seven, and you've bought a lot of nice horses for them, Kenny.
Yeah, actually, Mike calling me since we were on this phone call, but that horse, we're going to be conservative and stretch him out. I think he's strictly a two-turn horse. I know that Andy Serling wants me to run him in New York really badly, one turn mile. But, you know, Andy needs to stick to prognosticating and not training.
This is going to get interesting because I don't think Andy's wrong, Kenny.
He's wrong. He doesn't know the horse. Look, the horse is difficult to train. He's not an easy horse to train. There's nothing black and white about him. He's not your conventional go out there every day. He's very particular.
All right.
You can't change his circumstances, or he will refuse. And he has to train in one location, like I said. And if he alters his schedule, then he gets
out.
Upset.
Yeah.
And you're not going to take him to Belmont Park at a mile and a half oval and expect him to look around and go, "Oh, I like this new spot." No, he's going to stick to two turns. We're going to probably space his races right. He'll train at Churchill and then he'll ship and run. But right now, the Stephen Foster, newly anointed at Ellis Park, would be ideal. And then, you know, then he would train in Kentucky and probably point towards the Whitney and also the Jockey Club Gold Cup later in the season. Those are the three races that I've got on the calendar for him. I think he's
nice.
You know, he's fast, and kind of a different type of horse, certainly a different type of running style than Rattle and Roll, and we're gonna keep those two separated. But the shortening back to a one turn mile was, to me, ridiculous to propose that. No, the Mackens are from Kentucky. They're locally Louisville family, and no sense in going to New York till a little bit later. And I would love to win a Whitney in a Jockey Club with him. I mean, he's a really, really, really talented horse. And look, we're gonna have some fun. But you know, Andy needs to stick to the booth.
let's get a couple of updates too on some recent maiden winners. You had that Fritus the Red break the maiden, as well as Vivi's Dream, and there was even another one I think I saw in the last couple of weeks.
Oh, yeah, we got some bullets there. Fritus the Red was a filly that we've always been very fond of, and she fell off form a little bit in the fall last year. But we've gotten her some good preparation this spring, and her last race was huge. She actually ran a second faster than the filly stake at Churchill this past weekend over the same distance. So I'm talking to Keith Dolshell about inviting her to the Belmont Oaks, because I think she's going to love 10 furlongs. And I would love to think that her and Mendelssohn's March could land in early July, you know, there at Belmont. We're probably going to forward both of those horses to New York this week to get them. They'll train at Saratoga to get them ready for some of those nice races. And it's a high level problem. And then Vivi's Dream's any kind of horse. I mean, probably as impressive a young filly as I've ever been around, and you know I've been around a lot of good ones. And
sure.
She what she did in her maiden win was wow, and what she does in the morning typically is about the same. I mean, she just has cruising speed that I don't know that I've seen, and she's got a really good mind. So we're going to probably sit on her until the debutante, and then the debutante takes her to probably going to stay local again because it's Mike Mackin's filly. My wife and I own a small piece, but we'll probably stay for the Pocahontas and then point towards Alcibiades. I don't see her going to New York for the summer, but she would have every reason in the world to fit there. Although she may go to New York to train for the summer, but not necessarily to race.
How about that? I'm going to ask you about a two-year-old that's already run twice. That Top of the Street looks like a horse you got confidence in.
Yeah, you know, he ran green in his first race and didn't really show what he'd shown in the morning. And then his second race here the other day showed a lot of guts to come up the rail and was beaten three-quarters of a length and showed a lot of professionalism, which mine typically do a little bit better second time out anyway. And then he galloped out in front. Mike and I, another Mackin horse, Mike and I talked about possibly running him in the Bashford Manor. He'll probably be entered in the maiden race that weekend, but because he's run, if that race overfills, he's unlikely to get in. But we might Bashford Manor that horse, and I think that horse is just begging for a mile plus. And I think we could have a really good fall with him.
Excellent. What about the Oaks filly? The Ashland winner.
Defining Purpose is scheduled. Yeah. So we came out of the Oaks fine. We've had some suitors trying to buy her, and we're actually kind of going through some of that. Even if she changes hands, she stays with me. And then I'm looking at a list of races, you know, maybe the Delaware Oaks, maybe the Iowa Oaks, the Indiana Oaks. Those are all kind of local. And then we'll take it from there. I mean, I'd love to think she could make the Alabama by the end of the year, but she's got to show a little bit more talent than she has. I mean, she's good filly, obviously winning a grade one. But I'm a little worried that Saratoga might be that the surface up there is a little deeper, and she's kind of a lighter type filly. I'm not sure that works. But, you know, look, let's see what she does in July, and then we'll worry about August and September after that.
Now, a lot of good things ahead, obviously. Kenny, I mentioned in my opening as I addressed the move to Ellis for the last few weeks of the spring meet that you were going to join us, and that you were somebody, anybody that listened, you and Buff Bradley and Dale Romans, and Dale is on next. You guys have all been huge proponents of Ellis anyway. Talk a little bit about your thoughts about, you know, what has transpired over the last 5 weeks, and any concerns or any problems this presents, or is it just something we roll with?
Well, I personally haven't had a lot of trouble with the racetrack. Knock wood, but we've had a really good spring. I think it's been a good surface. I don't know the other horses that have had injury issues, and so it's hard for me to say what went wrong there. But I mean, I don't think it's a big deal for them to move the meet to Ellis 3 weeks early. I mean, we've shipped and run to Ellis Park for, in my case, four decades,
yeah.
Going on 4 decades.
Yeah.
So anyway, we're used to that trip. It's a good surface down there, and I think that as long as they, you know, keep the schedule similar, the condition books missed a couple of days, and then they're going to get back in, I guess, a regular condition book schedule that they'd already written. So we'll see, and I'm sure it'll be fine. I mean, it gives them time to kind of go over it and analyze it, and certainly don't want any more negative coming out of this situation. But look, horses are they're so unpredictable, and that's the hard part of our game. And I'm not gonna. I just don't know how. At some point, horses do get hurt, and that's really the worst part about the sport, is that the people that are close to these horses are the ones that are most affected. And whether it's the owner or the trainer or the staff, I mean, we put so much time and energy into taking good care of them, and horses have they colic. You get, I mean, I've had horses that got a little abscess in the foot and ended up dying over it.
Uh-huh.
I mean, because they foundered, and I've had horses run through fences, and I've had mare, accidentally kick her own foal in the head. I mean, it's just sometimes that is the really difficult part. But, you know, that doesn't mean that sport isn't full of a lot of positives. It just means that, yes, that livestock is never easy to handle, and we've got to continue to try to make the racetrack safe and the process of racing horses safer.
Let me ask, in terms of the process, Kenny, you've got full confidence. I mean, when the state vets, when they do pre-race exams, and talk a little bit about the supervision and that portion, because it does seem to me that it's something that's gone unaddressed in all of this. I don't want to say finger pointing, but there has been some of that, and it always bothers me when there's attempts to more or less accuse the horseman, you know, of every fault imaginable.
Well, I don't like that side of it. I mean, we do the best. We don't. We're at the point where we're not doing any. We don't have any medication. I can't remember the last time I injected a horse's ankles or knees or hocks. We're not training on Butte. I don't train on Lasix. I don't train on anything. Yet the state vet has been really, really difficult to work with. I mean, they find reasons not to let one run, and we're scratching our head on some cases, and they want to maybe analysis paralysis might be the word, but I'm sure that they're well-intentioned, and we we're going to work with them as long as we have to, and in some cases we don't always agree, but it's a I suppose it's the right thing to do is to stay on top of each horse and make sure that they don't have any issues. But horses that run hard have issues, and I don't know how you're going to, make that go away.
Yeah, well put. Before I let you go, I've also got to say I'm sure you were watching Friday with the Epsom Oaks as Daddy's little darling saved the last dance. She put in a good try.
Yeah, it was a good race. She looks a whole lot like her mother, and I would have loved to have been able to participate with Daddy's little darling when she, of course, had that Pellier jumping off. But that's a great race, and I watched the Oaks and the Derby, English Oaks and Derby, and I always enjoy those races, and they're so historic, and I'd like to win one of them one day, to be honest with you. I think it's doable.
We know you've got those kinds of interests and ambitions. Kenny, thanks so much for this. Well done, and we'll talk soon.
All right, thanks.
Kenny McPeak, everybody, and obviously a lot of good things going on. Let's get to Dale Romans. Got to keep this train on the track. We're actually only 15 behind. And I think we did okay to get to this point. Only 15 minutes behind. I sent Dale Romans a text, and I said,
"Hello,
hey, Dale. Good morning."
Good morning.
I explained that we had a couple of good talkers before you, so that's why we were late.
That's no problem,
Dale. I reached out to you in particular, and I saw that you were quoted fairly widely over the weekend. The news Friday that Churchill was going to move the last few weeks of the meet to Ellis, and your whole life and career are based there. You understand the thinking. You've got a mutual respect with management. Talk a little bit about what your thoughts are and how you think the industry and the public and horse players and stakeholders should look at this.
Well, I never thought I'd see a day like this come where our crown jewel meet in the state of Kentucky's canceled early and moved down the road. I guess I can understand where it's coming from, but I think it's a little overkill. I honestly don't believe there's anything wrong with the racetrack. We're not having any unusual injuries in training in the mornings that you'd see on a bad racetrack. Tammy gets out there every day on it, and she said she couldn't feel where it was uneven and all the problems, like, they're so different. It's two heart attacks and a horse getting injured in the paddock, and it's just hard to put your finger on what's going on. But I think they kind of hit the panic button at the highest level here and said, thought they needed to get the heat off of them from the national press.
And I made the suggestion that it from a prudent standpoint and from the opportunity to take some of the pressure out of the steamer, it does make some sense, and there's some practical application. I mean, let's get into some of the things, because everybody seems to agree that the track is not the problem. And we've talked on the show for years, Dale, whenever there's clusters like this of fatalities, it's always multifactorial. You had a horse. You lost a horse. I mean, talk a little bit about what you think is at play here in terms of, I keep bringing up the state vets. I mean, people say, oh, there's no common thread. Well, there's a common thread with a lot of them that the state vet let them run.
Yeah, he let them run. And listen, you can lay it on a state vet. They do the best they can. They scratch a lot of horses. You know, they scratch and make people mad all the time, scratching too many. You know, with my horse was a perfectly sound horse going into it. I think everybody says the same thing. You know, my horse is sound. They are so scrutinized now. That's another thing that doesn't make any sense. They can't scrutinize them any closer than they do already. And I'm not going to lay it on the state vets. I'm not going to say it's their fault. I see what they do every day. I see how hard they work on the horses, try to keep them safe. And they scratch. I mean, they probably scratch more than they should have to.
Right. And that's been addressed. I mean, that has been brought up as well. In fact, Kenny McPeak and even Mark Hassey earlier, that's noted. Well, then, what other precautions are possible at this point, Dale? I mean, because one thing is certainly going to become evident, especially if there's a big push to bring synthetics into wider application. Horses are still going to get hurt, and there's going to be fatalities because it's just part of how the animal is designed, and you know that. It's not going to be a zero. At any point, are we going to get to zero? So
there will never be zero tolerance in this. This can't be, and we all know that. But you know, right now it's down to about 1.2 per thousand. But that doesn't mean we shouldn't still work towards getting it as low as possible. And there's some things out there that are in the pipeline. Just like, it's very complicated to talk about. But the Kentucky State Race Commission has given a grant to David Lambert and his team, Dr. David Lambert, to use. They're using motion sensors. Every horse has these motion sensors, stride safe. And I'm doing it on every horse that I work in the mornings. I'm part of the project.
Yeah.
I think it shows, I think there's a big chance that this could show us a lot in the future and not only help us keep horses from having catastrophic injuries, but keep horses in the game because it's picking up odd motions that we go look for what's causing it, and we're fixing the problems. I only have one right now for sure that I couldn't see was going off, that the sensor said was going off a little bit. We sent him over for a PET scan in his legs and found the very beginnings of a hairline crack in his shin.
Yep.
That could have become a condylar that either was catastrophic or ended up having to be screwed back together and the horse is out for 8 months. And now I think we've turned it into a 30-day problem. I think so. There's things out there that people are working on, and I think technology is going to help us a whole lot. You can never replace horsemanship, but you can sure come with some good tools to aid our horsemanship.
No, there's no doubt. And the scan equipment that looks for micro fractures, like you're talking, because that, you know, there's people that say, oh, there's no such thing as a bad step. I understand the. What the thought is, but those bad steps are basically created by, you know, the coming apart of a microfracture that went undetected. I mean that's
right.
Certainly been a topic that in the last 10 years is something I never 10 years ago I didn't hear anybody refer to fissures or microfractures.
No, and now you do, and you're picking them up. But we didn't do PET scans before. You know, that Churchill put the PET scan machine. I just walked the horse from my barn over there. He was in there a couple hours and brought him back, and then we had the results the next morning that this horse just needs 60 days off, and he'll be fine. And if you can never prove that we picked this up and saved this horse's career. That's one thing, you'll never be able to prove it. Until we get a lot of data in and see that the decline is lower than 1.2 per thousand and it keeps going down. But I think, you know, things like that are good tools for the future. That's just a ways away before it starts making a major impact, but I can see it really helping the game.
Well, back to the circumstance that sees the meat shifted
the next few weeks. You've been having a terrific meet, and it's interesting, Dale, that we had a conversation about 6 weeks ago, and it was obvious that the barn was heating up, and a lot of that has come to fruition at Keeneland and now at Churchill.
Yeah, we've had a good run here. I mean, I hate to see Churchill ever end, especially when you're rolling along, running for these purses and things are going so well. But, you know, we all got to put the horse first and the good of the industry first. And it probably is the prudent thing for Churchill to do.
Dale, you've had horses over the years at Ellis. I mean, is there any technical, configuration issues that would make you look to send horses elsewhere, or is there any part of this execution?
I love Ellis Park. We'd be sitting here training at Ellis anyway in 3 more weeks. We'd be training at church ownership in Ellis just like we have for the last 30 years. And I keep telling anybody, if anybody had a trip to Churchill planned for the next 3 weeks, take a full day and drive down to Ellis Park. I bet you'll have a good time.
No, the pea patch, absolutely. Let me get a couple of things in as well, Dale. Let's talk a couple of stake horses. Any regret about forging ahead with Cyclone Mischief and not waiting the 2 weeks for him for Preakness?
No. He's the Derby's the Derby, and he was doing really good when he got there. He's another one that strides they picked up a little. It came out of the Derby with just a very small little thing bothering him, and we've stopped on him for 30 days, and that's all he needed. He'll be back in the barn this week.
Excellent. You got anything in mind for him as an intermediate or short-term goal?
No, not really. We're getting back over and training on him, maybe run him up in Saratoga this summer.
Excellent. There was a horse going back to Baltimore that seemed to become a little bit of a mojo play, and then all of a sudden, became favored, Coppola, in the turf sprint.
Coppola is a nice little horse, and he's doing very well. He ran a nice race up there. He ran a huge race at Churchill. He loved this track, and I was looking forward to running him here, but I guess we'll have to ship him down to Ellis and run him down there. But he's a nice colt.
What's his for turf sprinting? What's his best distance?
Probably 5.5.
All right,
you can get those races.
I want to get a couple of potential winners for people to take note of. And it seems like that Run Happy colt, that Smile Mon, is maybe starting to get close.
You know, he worked really good this morning, and his race of the day was a nice race. And Martin Garcia came back and told me to put some blinkers on him. He doesn't usually do that. I don't usually, I'm not big to jump and change equipment, but we put some blinkers on him this morning. He worked like a really good one. I just think he was a horse that took some time to come around. He probably would be a good bet next up.
There we go. Smile Mon, and this is a 3-year-old that's now made 3 starts, but it looked like that was a step forward. It was beaten about 4 lengths, but it looks like he's moving in the right direction. He's a run happy. He's out of a Warfront mare, and that's kind of interesting, that tensus punch.
Yeah, it is interesting. And, I think that's why he takes to the grass so well.
And she was, she was a Merrill trained her.
Really? I don't remember her racing.
Merrill Shear trained her to $250,000 in earnings. She was a Louisiana bred, and a lot of stake placements. She did win the Louisiana Jewel, actually, at Delta.
I didn't know that about her.
There you go. Well, if you got any questions, check with Merrill. He'll set you straight about that.
I know.
Who else is involved in that horse was Dr. Belinsky in New York. Bred Smile Mon.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't realize that either.
I'm glad I was able to, set you straight on a few things.
Yeah. Educate me.
All right. What else? You got to give us, there's got to be more going on. How's
there's plenty going on, but we got a bunch of, I tell you what I got a whole barn full of Not This Times that just showed up. I think they're going to be, as many of those a guy can get in the barn, you want to have all of them. I wish every stall was a Not This Time, the way he's doing.
I can remember, I don't know where we, it might have been, it'd have to be after Breeders' Cup, but you said to everybody, I mean, you were disappointed, obviously, but you said, He's going to be a tremendous sire. You absolutely guaranteed it.
Yeah, and he backed me up, and I love him for it. But he was just a special horse, you know. He had so much talent, and of course, I love that Giants Causeway line, and he's making his daddy proud.
Speaking of some of those types, what's next for that colt that broke the maiden, Novitski?
I'm in Florida because he's a Florida bred, and I left him with Terry Pompey. And
okay.
Yeah, so she's going to be running down there. You know, her husband, Barry Bruckheimer, breaks all of the horses for All Ball, and we just thought it was a good fit for him just to stay down there.
Well, I'll tell you what, that was a nice win.
Yeah, I was. I was proud of him that day. I kept him down there to break his maiden and then turned him over. So now it's up to you. You got to pick up, take it from here.
Very nice. Well, watch, that obviously was a name for Derek Novitski.
Yeah, Sammy named him. And she, it's funny because Jason Lutz, that manages All Ball Stable, is a huge Dallas Cowboy fan. So he told her just name the horse. He's got so many to name. Well, she named it Nowinski just because she said he plays for Dallas. I said, yeah, but he plays for the Mavericks, not the Cowboys. She didn't know the difference.
That's so great.
Yeah.
I love that. Oh, my God. Dale, as always, I appreciate the frank response and the comments and thoughts. And when are we going to see you?
You might see me. You'll see me for Saratoga. But remember, everybody, this too shall pass, and we'll get through it. And we're always putting the horse first.
Dale Romans, everybody. Romans Racing on your Twitter. And number one in your heart. Dale, talk soon. Thanks so much.
Thank you, bud.
Dale Romans rounding out the first 90 minutes of coverage. And I don't know. I hope that those... I certainly hope that the sky is falling crowd. I hope you're at least, you know, mollified to some degree. That was a good way to end the trio of conversations. And they were increasingly upbeat, right? Cassie, you know, we started with some sadness, but then, you know, forged forward. Let's forge toward the second half. Case, let's head to the break. And when we come back, Rich Migliori. In fact, Mig just texted me. He's in the car, but in a bad area. So he wanted a few minutes, but I can make that happen. We've got lots to go over. So we'll do some recapping of other things, and that could include, I'll save that, I gave you the Penn National, right? Let me give you some of the something smaller that and you can of course hear the tractors. Let me turn, there we go. We don't need ambient noise for the tractors. Speaking of Texas Derby, Lone Star, the one thing I forgot to mention to everybody Friday, there were some Texas stakes at Lone Star on Saturday. Brett Calhoun with the first-time starter, Marfa Sky, a Braidster colt. These were two-year-olds. This was in the Staunch Avenger Texas Stallion stake. Macassar Corporation, homebred, out of A Song and a Prayer mare, Marfa Sky, robbed actually. These were 5 furlong races, at least the two baby races. The other baby race was Brett for client Mansfield Racing. And as it happens, this was a too much bling filly, too much geeky, that won under Danny Cabrera. And Danelle Durham, too much bling fame, she bred this one. Mansfield Racing owns. This was a romping winner at 3-2. And then the other two stakes, Cabrera also a winner for Karen Jacks, for Carl Moore, with Escarbauer bred. Another too much bling called Dustum, 5-1. 5-1. That was in the Wayne Hanks. That other two-year-old race was the Panzeretta division. And then in the Texas Horse Racing Hall of Fame, Sunlit Song, My Golden Song, that Mindy Wills sent out for breeder Carolyn Barnett. Barnett. My golden song out of an early flyer mare. Stewie Elliott aboard. So that was the, those were the, those Texas races. How about a quick survey of the best of Ohio? All right. Best of Ohio. Do we have time for best of Ohio? The Buckeye results. The Baron, the Norm Baron, Queen City Oaks. Soft Talk, Joe Sharp went up and won easy. Won by 8 over that other Joe Sharp, that sweet child of mine, who went favored at 2-5, but it was the other Sharp, Soft Talk, for Charles Johnson and Bobby Rankin. You had, I told you, Mike Maker had a couple of wins with Farron Peterson, including Trojan Tail in the green carpet for Bill Butler. That was the Outwork, homebred. How about Jerry Sparks, the horse that he owns? Dougie Doro, 3-5 in the Palacios. And in the Diana, Squid for Maker and Butler. Another winner with Farron Peterson. And Brilliant Journey in the Gendelman, Larry Smith for Mark Kuntz, and Kenny Dalton. There you go. Best of Ohio. We're at Belmont. Back after this.
It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio. Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America. But we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA Horse Breeders Association is funding cutting-edge research at Penn Vet into equine health and safety.